Did you lock into the W at all last night?
I didn't.
Yesterday?
No, I was watching NBA all night. Which was great as well. I think it's interesting. I don't think anyone really considers that even the ladies have to like get bigger and stronger. Like from their rookie season on, they've got to understand that you're now playing against, you know, grown women. Yeah. And it's not just walk in and you're just like everybody else. I mean, there's a learning curve to everything, but also there's just like a strength and all that you have to develop even for the WNBA.
Absolutely. Ramsey in the chat, in the Matthews Mattress chatty house, he says Diana Taurasi was 7-11. I went into that game. I wanted to hate so bad on Diana Taurasi. I was
really
just waiting because I didn't like the way she was behaving. I was just waiting to hate on her. You old ass. I was waiting. She was cooking last night. She was cooking. That shot was so pure last night. I was like, I can't even say that, man. She's cooking tonight.
Diana is a character, man. That's what she like. They put her on TV to her the reels of her. On the call with Bird, the simulcast are insane, especially when South Carolina is playing.
Yeah, that's her move. That's a go-to.
Oh, that's 100. That's her favorite thing to reference. That is her favorite thing. What she called? What's the girl on the sky? The big
Camilla.
Yeah,
Cardoza.
Cardoza. What she called Cardoza? Man, I'm not even comfortable repeating it, but she's Yeah, Diana's 1-1.
Yeah.
And that performance yesterday, I didn't expect Phoenix to be competitive in that game.
It was right there, too.
Yeah,
no,
they had it. Yeah, they had a chance at it. It was 83-80 at one point.
Yeah, you hear Asia curse.
Yeah. Yeah.
She tried not to curse before, and then she just got to talking, and she said S, and then she's oh, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Alec, my bad.
Oh, did you see Becky? Becky Hammond? Did you see what they talked to her during the game?
I didn't see that.
Oh, man. I don't know if it was too loud. They kind of need to stop that, too. Their ESPN does that. They talk to them during the game. So, like, you know how they, in the NBA, they would talk to them in between the quarters. I don't know why they don't do, well, partly because they don't have a sideline. No, they have a sideline reporter.
For those games.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. But they're doing this thing where, all right, we're back here for the fourth quarter, and let's check in with Becky Hammond about her strategy. Game's going on. Like, up and down, play calls are being made. And I don't know if it was too loud or what, but Becky was like, huh? Yeah. And there's, like, a camera on her the whole time, right? And she's like, yeah, we just got to work better and work as a team. And, you know, the defense has to be better. And, you know, yeah, just couldn't get done with this fast enough. She's like, we just got to be better, right? And then it got loud, and they asked her a question. And she, like, looks towards the camera. She's like, what? Huh? And then they go, yeah, we know you're busy right now.
We know you're busy.
We'll let you go. She's, yeah, thanks. All right. Get this thing off my head.
That's tremendous. That's, oh, yeah. Oh, I'm looking for it now. I got it. Oh, she's oh, this isn't good. Oh, she is confused. She
It was hilarious.
This is
she says, yeah, no, all right, no, I guess. Thanks, no problem. And no, she was trying to be as nice as she could.
No, you got to see this. Y'all got to see this. This is epic. This
she was trying to be professional or whatever,
stuff.
But she was so, like, out of sorts with, I think she couldn't hear what they were saying, and then they stopped talking. So she was like, yeah, what? Huh?
No, this is worth the payoff, James. It's on the way. James is like, I'm in here on my birthday for this. These two idiots.
Offensively, do you think?
No, we don't really need to. I think it's even funnier if you can't hear the call. Just watch Becky's face as this all transpires. So she's just perplexed. The best is when she turns to look at the camera. That what? Thanks.
Get this off of me.
That's tremendous. I love that so much. Yeah, I love that so much. Man, I just threw James out of there.
Oh, poor James. On his birthday. Come on, man. Come on.
Jesus.
James, you must be. This is the very first time we'll reference this game. You must be feeling pretty good about the Dallas or the Denver Nuggets. They looked dead a week ago, and now they look like they can't be beaten.
That was an incredible performance last night.
Yeah, there's some moments in that game where you're just in awe of how good Jokic is. That play where he grabbed the one-handed rebound and just turned and fired it like 60, 70 feet down the court to a guy in stride for a wide-open dunk. Like, there's so many things, the nuances of the game that he does so well. And I don't know what happened in the first two games. I'm going to guess that, again, some sort of weird, like, really good schematic play that the Timberwolves had set up and were able to kind of take him and take Jokic and the Nuggets out of their rhythm. But that's gone now. And I don't know how you get it back. That series looks over, and the Nuggets look kind of like what we thought before. They look like they're destined to go to the finals and give whoever makes it there a really good run for their money.
Yeah, I'll ask a follow-up to that because you kind of just sort of said it, and I know we were critical of Draymond Green and his ridiculousness last night.
Oh, gosh.
I don't mind when he is taking the job seriously. I actually do think he's good, but he's used each day that he's been on the air to, you know, act out his personal vendettas against Yusuf Nurkic and Rudy Gobert. Though Draymond wasn't the only one who was just destroying Rudy Gobert last night, but he said something about what was the phrasing? He said something like they don't believe anymore. And he pulled up the video, or they aired the video of Karl Anthony Towns inexplicably limping off the court. And they're like, he's like, as a competitor, I just look for like little things, and like seeing that they're flabbergasted is what happened to them over the last three games. And it doesn't look like they believe they could do this anymore. And if Ernie had said it, I'd been like, man, that was really, but Draymond said it. So I was like, then I thought about it. I was like, man, is he right?
I don't think he is. I think that was hate from Draymond.
Oh, he definitely
everything about him, which is why it was an awful performance from him last night. And I really don't need to see him on TV anymore, because like you just mentioned, he brings his personal vendettas onto inside the NBA. And I don't care that you don't like Rudy Gobert. Like, I really don't care. I don't care that you're trying to take a victory lap about, you know, defensive player of the year and all this other stuff. Like, just let's talk about the game for real. And him saying that, that's hate. He hating on Minnesota. You think Anthony Edwards, like, man, we can't do this? No, stop, Draymond. Like, you reaching he's talking as if he's some cerebral guy, like, oh, we got him or whatever. Like, no, I think
it's not just Ant-Man, though. I think Ant-Man, if they were down 7-0 in whatever a series would look like when you're down, he'd be like, yeah, we'll get him.
I think Karl Anthony Towns was the same way.
I don't think Karl Anthony Towns is built like that.
I think Anthony Edwards
is so unique.
I think all those guys, I believe a lot of those guys that get to that point are delusional. That's why a lot of this stuff happens the way they do. And they look at, especially if they're only down a game, like if it was 3-0, maybe it'd be different. But they're down a game. Oh, we go to Minnesota, win this, and we come back and win a game 7.
That's what you would have got from Ant-Man.
That's what I think Anthony Edwards feels.
Yeah, and
that's what I think Mike Conley feels. Also, we got to acknowledge losing Mike Conley is tough.
Yeah.
That is not a small.
Monte Morris, he tried for as long as he could, but
that's not a small loss. Like, I think Mike Conley's the one who brought this whole thing together for Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and it's just having that ball handler on the court, the secondary ball handler, because Ant-Man has the ball most of the time, but you still need someone who can make plays for others, you know, to step up. And not having that is really difficult. It's kind of like the Kings not having Monk. It really just wipes out that whole secondary thing that you do that makes you slightly different. But I'm kind of in agreement with you. I've never been a Cat fan, and I've heard way too many stories from, you know, from their camps over the years about, you know, just like guy doesn't want to play here, doesn't want to play there. Like, you know, what was the one season after Jimmy Butler left? He just decided to take like 3 months off, kept saying he had his knee hurt, and no one ever found anything. They sent him in for every test. They're just like, okay, just hands up in the air. Like, I guess whatever's going to happen to, you know, the head coach and the staff and everybody else after this, I guess it is what it is. We're just tied to this guy and probably all going to lose our jobs because we're having a horrible season. And that's typically what happens, you know? So I don't know. I'm not super impressed with him. I think he's tried to turn the corner, but there's a lot of like kind of fake tough guy stuff there that I don't get. Like, what have you done? And I kind of, it's always kind of been the same with Anthony Davis, the same, you know, you just keep waiting for him to play out an entire playoff series or an entire season where, you know, I had someone tell me one time, it wasn't just that he missed X amount of games when he was on our team. It's that he also went to the locker room 13 times during in the first half and never came back. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like when you're in a situation like this, man, it's all hands on deck. Everybody here all day long, just like Zion. Like, Zion walked off the court, and I know it ended up being a pretty, you know, what looked like a longer term injury, but he just walks off the court and with a minute left in a game, minute and a half. Like, you can't tear me off the court in that situation. I don't care if I got something grabbing, I don't feel right. No, not with a minute and a half left in a game.
Well, that's not fair. I don't think that Zion was hurt.
Well, yeah, but I think that there's...
Are you talking about the playoff?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, Zion was hurt.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's some players that are going to be like, okay, yeah, like there's something there, but he didn't walk off with like a big limp or anything else. Like, he looked okay walking off the court. In just a situation where you're like 90 seconds left in a game, man, like, you'd have to rip me off a court to get me to let someone else finish that game. And just some guys aren't built that way. And some guy, like, the league is kind of that way at this point. Like, there are a lot of guys who aren't built that way anymore.
James is salty on his birthday.
I'm just saying.
Man.
Can I tell you something else that pissed me off about Draymond Green?
Sure.
Jackass. So he goes on this whole personal thing about Rudy Gobert. Like, that's mm-hmm. what all that night was just a dance on Rudy.
And there's no way TNT didn't know that this was going to happen. By the way, you didn't remind me about 30 Rock.
Ah, my fault. 30 Rock.
So Shaq and Charles weren't at work last night?
They were
in New York.
It was odd for both of them to be gone like that.
And they were both in New York? Where 30 Rockefeller Plaza is, mm-hmm. home of NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, your boy said it's a done deal.
No, your boy said it's a done deal. So,
I believe him. I think it's.
But my thing is,
we said that before he said it. We said it's pretty much a wrap. It looks like the NBA wants this to happen, so it's going to happen.
My feeling is, if they're marking the end of TNT. Or excuse me, if they're marking the end of TNT and inside the NBA, when they announce their new basketball deal, when NBC announces the deal, they want to be able to include something that involves Charles Barkley and potentially Shaquille O'Neal, mm-hmm. that you'd be insane to call it inside the NBA, but some sort of NBA-centric show mm-hmm. that has Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal a part of it. We know we know Ernie's not going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the situation is with Kenny, because obviously he wasn't there. Yeah. But maybe the idea is we can't have all three of you missing at the same time. Like, who knows? Mm-hmm. But I did wonder immediately when they're like, they missed a playoff game? Wait, they're in New York, both mm-hmm. of them together?
Right.
I felt like this was tied to the TV deal somehow.
Which is also kind of odd, because like, it couldn't wait two more days. TNT's not on Thursday.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to announce it on Friday.
Which I don't think they would announce it during the playoffs.
Right.
And is this for next season?
No.
The following season.
It's the following season.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy because we're going to have like a lame duck season.
Well, no, you're going to have a... Well, no, it's only TNT. So you're going to have a farewell season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a full-on... It's going to be a full-on farewell.
Why is Ernie not going?
From what we've read, Ernie wants to stay at TNT and continue to do baseball stuff. And
oh.
you know, he has a pretty broad deal with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think he's probably also thinking at this point, like, what else can this, at least I would be if I was in his position. We want these things to go on forever, right? Because we enjoy them. But if I'm Ernie, I'm probably looking at it like, what more can we do with this show? Mm. Like, inside the NBA was TNT. This is what we did. This is what we have. Yo, Kenny goes great. Shaq goes great. Charles goes, like, fantastic. Y'all could do something. We've done all we can do together. Yeah. Let's let this end this way, and I'll do my baseball and March Madness and all that other stuff.
And I don't know if this is Ernie's thing or not, but, I mean, he is Turner Broadcasting for life. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all. I don't know, but it feels like that's all he's ever done is Turner Broadcasting, way before Inside was even thought of. You know what I mean? And Ernie seems like the kind of guy where he's like, nah,
they've been good to me for 30 years or whatever.
I'm not going to switch up. If there's still work to do here, mm-hmm. I'm not going to switch up on them, and you know, and I'll stay. So
Ernie probably also thinking, I don't know how much longer I want to do this.
That too.
Yeah.
That too.
67 years old.
Yeah. And he's had a phenomenal career. Phenomenal career.
Yeah, but that power forward that was acting like a jackass last night, you know, he's getting down here talking about Rudy Gobert getting, you know, destroyed by Jokic, right? And defensive player of the year getting destroyed by Jokic. And he's got all the answers as to, you know, what you should do against Jokic. And why isn't he doing this? Because this is what you should do and all this other stuff. And number one, it's going up against Nikola Jokic. Like, who stops that guy? I don't care if you're the defensive player of the generation. Like, ain't nobody stopping him. He goes to work. But Draymond got all these damn answers for what you're supposed to do against Jokic. In this series, Jokic is averaging 29.4 points per game, 10.4 rebounds, 9.2 assists, shooting 53.8% from the field. In a series that people saying Rudy's just getting destroyed.
Now, I feel like I know where this is going.
Couple years ago.
There it is.
Nuggets Warriors. Mm-hmm. When Jokic didn't have nobody. He was out there with Monte Morris trying to play. Mm-hmm. 31 points a night. Mm-hmm. 13.2 rebounds. Only 5.8 assists because he had nobody to pass the ball to. Mm-hmm. He shot 57.5% from the field. Who the hell is Draymond Green to tell anybody what somebody should be doing? He got destroyed by this man, and he had no team.
Yeah, I mean,
shut the hell up. Not you, James. No. Draymond Green.
James to shut the hell up on his birthday.
I'm like, at the end of the day, I don't think Gobert has done a great job, and I also think that, like, for them to shift gears, like, midway through, it's like, oh well, Gobert's having a nice offensive night as well. He's got 15 points, and you're like, yeah, but the dude he's guarding's got 40. Like, it's over. And so for me, when I hear that, like, it's almost like they're making some excuses for Gobert. Like, Gobert has no answer. And at the end of the day, I don't just put it all on Gobert. Now you're at a point where you have to send somebody else to go help out. And I don't know who that is. And it, like, probably McDaniel's probably the guy that I would send at Gobert every single time and double team. And just hope that he doesn't cook you there. But at this point, like, you're in trouble. Like, you let this guy get going, and there's almost no way to stop him. He's so incredibly talented. Everything he does is unorthodox. There's no one else like him at all in the league that can do what he does. And you're just left with this, like, okay, we're getting destroyed in a chess match, and I don't know that we got another move.
So here's my problem with all of this. We need to make a decision on whether Nikola Jokic is incredible or Rudy Gobert sucks.
Both can be true.
No, they can't. Because if Rudy Gobert sucks, what Nikola Jokic did last night wasn't impressive. Mm. He beat up a defender that's ass, who y'all have been discrediting for half the season because it appeared he was going to be the defensive player of the year. He got cooked. I also saw him hit one of those stupid threes that he hits, where he's completely guarded by Rudy Gobert. He did the same thing to LeBron James year before, whatever it was. Rudy was all over him. He still made the shot. Either what Nikola Jokic did last night was incredible, or he just beat up on an ass defender.
Now, it didn't have to be that. He beat up on a good defender. He didn't beat up on the best defender in the league. He don't have to be
so ass. Who's better?
I think Wemby should have won Defensive Player of the Year.
So Wemby does a better job against Nikola Jokic last night than Rudy Gobert does? Okay.
I think he does.
Okay. I don't know.
I think Wemby's a better defender than Rudy Gobert.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think both can be true. I think that he can just be a great player and that the other guy can, you know, cannot be great.
You could say ass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that, like, Gobert is, I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame after winning four defense player of the year's awards. So at least that's what it most likely. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's another guy who isn't in the Hall won
Ben
four.
Ben Wallace got in there. No disrespect to him, but then Rudy should be in there.
Mm-hmm. The difference is if Ben has a chip and he doesn't.
True.
And so that's always going to be the question. I don't know. I don't think Gobert is a bad defender, but I also I think that you can play him off the floor in almost any series. The one series that you can't play him off the floor is this one because there's another giant for him to go up against, and he's getting torched by that guy. Mm. And so, yeah, I think for sure Jokic is that good, but I also, like, it's tough. It's a bad matchup for anyone in the league. That's why the guy's won the MVP three of the last 4 years.
Which goes to another discussion about this series. Mm. And I'm not saying he shouldn't start or anything else like that. But it doesn't matter who you play against Jokic. He's going to do what he wants to do. So if I'm looking at that, I'm like, all right, maybe Cat could guard him. Maybe I'm getting Naz Reid, who was horrific in that game last night. Naz Reid was awful for your sixth man of the year when they needed you the most with your starting point guard out. I think he had 1 point. As my guy Fred in college once said, how you get 1 point? Like, how we get 1 point? Like, that's awful. But you may have to think about more lineups with Naz Reid and Cat, as opposed to Rudy Gobert out there, because even though Rudy had 15 or whatever, I mean, the game plan is, like, let him get whatever he wants around the basket. Like, that's not going to beat us. Jokic is helping out because let him pass it to Rudy, and he'll dunk it, or we'll foul him or whatever. Like, he's not a threat offensively. So if you're getting destroyed on the defensive end and you're not really helping stop things there, and you're part of the game plan for the other team on the offensive end, you might – need to see your minutes go down. And Naz Reid, he brings Jokic out a little bit to the perimeter, and maybe that can get your offense going a little bit too, because another thing that they're doing is they're double teaming the hell out of Anthony Edwards. Like, he's got two defenders every time, especially on that screen and roll. And you may have to get Gobert off the court a little bit more than you have in the last three games.
But that's
right now, it's not working. Like, this is barbecue chicken.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's what you do with every team. You double-team their best player and get the ball out of his hands. I mean, it's what they did.
Yeah, and now and get the ball out of their hands is like get the ball to Rudy as opposed to get the ball to Nas.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to dictate where the ball is going to go.
Sorry, what's the idea? He can shoot better?
He can spread the floor a little bit.
He can get out of the paint?
He's just a better scorer. Like, he can go for 25.
Yeah.
Once again, terrible game last night, but he has the ability to go for 25 from beyond the arc, from getting to the basket, all this other stuff, where Rudy just kind of stays in that dunker spot. And if you foul Rudy, that's not even the worst thing in the world. Like, foul him. Like, make him go to the line.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, certainly they're going to have to do something way different. They're going to have to figure out how to I don't know if it's double
teams. That is the funny thing about all this. We were up 2-0 a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if I'm
one
if
of
I'm
the
Minnesota,
games,
like
one
go
of
ahead.
The games was no Rudy. Not saying it's all his fault, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's
probably
true.
The most dominant win was no Rudy.
The game two.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I'm making Christian Braun Brown beat me. I'm making, you know, name that rando that steps on the court, whether it's Reggie Jackson or any of the other guys that are getting minutes in that. I'm letting them beat me. I'm not gonna allow Jokic, but that's the beauty of Jokic. He's such a great passer. So that's the biggest difference. Like, when you try to take away things from Anthony Edwards, he's still young and he makes a lot of mistakes when you double-team him. Jokic doesn't do that. He doesn't make a bunch of mistakes. He also can still pass over most players in the league because he's so big. And he's just got such a feel for the game. He is a natural like assist man where Anthony Edwards isn't. So when you send a double team or you shock him, whatever you want to call it, they're like, he's panicking. You can see it. He has not responded all that well all the time. And Gobert is like, okay, I mean, Jokic is like, okay, whatever you guys are going to do, I'm just going to, if you're going to do that to me, I'm going to find a guy that's wide open. And whatever it is that Denver does, those guys feel empowered and they're hitting their shots and they're coming up big. Game one, game two, it wasn't that way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what they were doing in game one and game two where you couldn't even get the lob to Aaron Gordon. But then, you know, the last game before this one, Aaron Gordon, like 11 of 12 from the field, like half of them were just dunks at the rim. Like, so again, this has become a game, a chess match, and just one guy is outcoaching the other over the last three.
We'll come back. James Hamm is spending his birthday here with us.
Hey.
We'll talk more NBA basketball. We'll talk some Kings basketball with our insider from the insiders, James Hamm, here with D-Lo and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. James Hamm celebrating his birthday in studio here with us as our day rolls along. Hammer, we had a chance to talk to Keith Smith earlier. He wrote about some of the financials for the Sacramento Kings, and for him, it was, I'll phrase it as a question. For you, is it as simple as, okay, the Kings signed Malik Monk, this is what they do? Kings don't sign Malik Monk, here's what they do.
No, there's a lot of variables here. Like, you can reset this roster in a bunch of different ways. Like, if they sign Malik, clearly that gives them a leg up, right? But you can't come back with the same exact team that didn't make the playoffs last year, this season. You can't. Yeah. So there's going to have to be other movement. And that's why I think it's really important that the Kings have a ton of expiring contracts to work with, you know, probably like $27-28 million worth of expiring contracts. They've got another maybe $36-38 million in guys who are on final 2 years of a deal. So yeah, I mean, they can be players in a lot of different ways in this year's draft. They can use their picks, their future picks. They can trade this year's pick. You know, they can get really, really creative with how they reinvent their roster. And just because if they're able to get Malik Monk back, that can't be the only move. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that move didn't, I mean, it would be a great move to bring him back, but that team, that you can't just run it back again. That doesn't make any sense. So
run it back. It's going to be a sequel.
It's going to be a little snug. Like, you got to figure things out and, you know, you got to get creative, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other options to go at.
See, one of the things that I think, we talked about this the other day, a version of running it back, I don't think is off the table. And I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world. And I know a lot of people would say, you just been bringing back the same team that's a playing team. And I say, yes, that's where they landed. I don't think that was this team's ceiling, though. You know what I'm saying? And saying that just bringing back the team that made the play-in, they're going to get the same results, that's, I don't think that's fair or accurate. Like, this team this past year had the potential and showed signs of being better. Were they to the level of the 3 seed again or an NBA contender? No, I wouldn't say that. But like Damian said, they were like 2-3 games out of the 6. Like, they lost one of their best players for the final 10 games of the season. So I would still try to make moves. I understand that. I'm not saying like, oh, everything's good. But if you got in a situation where you couldn't sign this player, you couldn't make this trade or something like that, and it was, you know, Malik is coming back and it's virtually the same situation, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I don't think they're just destined for the play-in because of that.
Yeah, but I have a tough time seeing where they take a monstrous leap. I know Keegan can get better.
But what's a monstrous leap mean?
Well, I mean, to be a contender, because as of right now, I mean, they didn't make the playoffs. I still think that they're in the mix around that area, but you just saw two teams pass you in Minnesota and OKC. You might have even seen three teams if you want to throw the Pelicans in there. And then you got a bunch of teams that are coming like from behind you here with the, like, Houston Rockets, Memphis Grizzlies, maybe one of those teams, maybe the Utah Jazz, maybe they make a couple of moves that puts them in the conversation. Like, you can't stay stagnant. If you're just, like, stuck in neutral, I know that there can be incremental improvement, and that not only that, but guys could just have a better year and you show success. But the talent level of this team, to me, wasn't quite good enough. It's close, but if you want to talk about being a contender and not just a playoff playing contender, but a true contender, you can't keep squandering years of De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis' career thinking that you can piece it together with just the same exact group that didn't get it done the year before. In my mind, I think you have to make a dramatic move. I don't think you have to flush half your roster, but I certainly think that you know who your core is and you know what you need to build around those guys, the types of athletes you need to build around those guys. So it's on the front office to go out and get those players that can make a difference and make this team better. This team is, I think it's probably two rotational pieces away from being like really good, but those have got to be pretty solid rotational. One a top five and one a top eight rotational piece to make you a true contender for something, or one really big piece. And so for me, that's where I'm looking at this team like, man, you have to make a move. You can't just sit around and hope for improvement, because you did that last year and you petered out long before you probably should have.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. I think we get really comfortable when we talk about teams that, you know, could be on the rise, like Houston, for example. I think San Antonio, like, everybody is really, really high on San Antonio, like, because of Victor Wembanyama, completely understandable. They have money to spend. They're always going to play hard, right? So there's some ascension there. Like, sure, how high? I don't know, but no one ever posed, like, it feels like the only team that didn't get that was last year's Sacramento Kings team. No one said, well, the Kings are ascending. The Kings could, you know, man, they could be a one seed. They could be a two seed. They could be right back here at the three seed. Everyone said they're going to fall off. Everyone said they overachieved last year. No one. Why isn't anybody saying Houston overachieved? Why is that just reserved for Sacramento? So Memphis is just going to come back and be good. No. Dylan Brooks is still gone, by the way. He's not coming back. He wasn't injured this year on that team, right? No. He's just not there. Yeah. How about Stephen Adams? I don't think they did. I don't know if Stephen Adams is ever playing basketball again.
And he plays for the Rockets now.
Stephen Adams does?
Yeah.
Trade him at the deadline.
Great. You traded a guy who doesn't play.
Right.
Cool. Point still stands. He's not returning for Memphis, is he? Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we're really just talking about Ja Morant at this point. Okay, everybody's got them coming back. Okay, word. So every team in the league gets better and has this chance to ascend, except for the three seed last year, who no one believed in, and they said they were going to fall back. No one in the history of the league has ever overachieved except last year's Sacramento Kings team. It's fascinating, Kings fans. We witness history. It's never happened before. No one thought the Kings would ascend. They all said they declined. First time in history, because you've got four not even playing team. Well, no one said anything good about Utah or Portland. So you got three non-playing teams who everyone's like, oh, they'll be better next year. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Incredible. I don't think the Kings are in a place where those teams are going to be better than them, but you're worried that one of them can take a leap, and you need to be a team that takes a leap too. And you got to figure out a way to do it. And I don't know what that is. We can sit here and pontificate.
Memphis goes from 27 to 40. That's a leap. That's 13 games better than they were last year. Memphis, they finished with 22 wins. The Kings finished with 46.
Yeah, but what was Memphis the year before? And then look at the injuries that Memphis
had. Well, that
was
an entirely different basketball team.
Yeah, whether it's, you know, it wasn't just Ja that missed, you know, the first 25 and then got hurt like a couple of games in. I mean, Marcus Smart missed almost the entire season. You had Desmond Bain miss a bunch of games. You had Brandon Clark miss
to take out Kevin Herter.
Yeah, right.
True. He said, mission complete. I'm out of here.
Wish you would have missed a couple more games. The other thing that you also bring up, Dame, is I guess we're just assuming OKC going to be 100% healthy again next year. Houston going to be healthy next year. The only team that ever has to apologize for being healthy and it can't last is the 2022-2023 Sacramento Kings.
It's just weird, man. It's just weird. I don't get it.
I think the Kings can win 50. The same team? The same team can win 50?
I think so, too.
Yeah, but
I don't want to see the same team win 50. I want to see a slightly different team win 50. But I don't this team, in my opinion, has the ability to be better than they played last year. Mm-hmm. Not champion, and that was James's point. Like James said, contender. Mm-hmm. This team, as it's currently constructed, I don't believe is a championship contender. I'm with you in the belief that I don't think they're far off. But they're not a championship contender. But could this team be a 49-50 win team? Yeah, I think they could.
I think, to your, both of you guys' point, I think this team, this group, and also agreeing with you guys, I don't want to necessarily see the same group come back. I want improvements. I think they played about as bad as they can play this year. Like, considering the talent that they have on there and, like, being inconsistent, not being able to beat the bad teams, not being able to beat New Orleans, Houston, those teams. Like, they played about as bad as this group can play, and it was 46 wins. Mm.
I don't disagree with that. I would say, like, sure, they could have been a little bit worse, but they didn't play well. Like, and they weren't consistent. And it wasn't just, I mean, you mentioned Houston. I mean, they lost to Charlotte. They lost to, like, the Detroit Pistons at home. Like, every bad team in the league beat them. Mm-hmm. So that's a really big problem, right? But I also think there was, like, a certain complacency to this team for some reason. I'm not sure why. So, but, like, look, what I'm saying is you just burned a year right now. They just burned a year of what should be, like, a 6 to 8 year, like, playoff window. Mm-hmm. You did. Okay, so how do you respond to that? You don't respond by doing the same thing again. You have to respond by making your roster better. You don't, this team doesn't have to make a move to make a move. They have to make a move because they weren't good enough. Mm. And if you want to be an OKC, if you want to be a Minnesota, if you want to be a Denver, you need a big piece. You need, like we've talked about on the show, like you need a Brandon Ingram. You need a player that moves the needle and not a player who, like, pseudo needle mover, which I think I would put even Kyle Kuzma in that camp at this point, a guy who sort of moves the needle. No, like, guys that you know are going to move the needle, and I don't know what player that is, and I don't know how you get that player.
Brandon Ingram.
It might be, but that is what this team has to have to make the next step forward, because they're close, and they're going to get natural progression. But there's also a possibility, people don't want to, like, acknowledge this, there's a possibility they lose Malik Monk and have no way to replace him except for the mid-level exception. And even that mid-level exception is going to put you over $160 million in salary cap. And you don't know what you're going to be, how much you're going to be able to improve. How much can you improve with a mid-level and the number 13 pick in the draft? So there's a much darker thing that could happen here where we're sitting here like, oh, well, there goes that window. Just watched it close. That hurt. So I don't know how this team, like, approaches this offseason with any other thought than to improve the overall talent of the roster.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're all in agreement. I mean, I don't think, while I, the whole argument is I can see them having some version of the same roster and still having an opportunity to be a playoff team. It's not what I want. Like, I want Monty and all these guys on the phones, talking to people, trying to acquire a player that can change their fortunes and elevate them. And I think that's where we all are, man. Like, they got to – one thing I think we all can agree on is they got to make the playoffs next year. They have to make the playoffs next year. Whether you're a contending team, championship team, whatever, that's up for debate. But you need to be in a playoff series next year.
Yeah, I totally agree, but I also, like, that's what we're talking about. You're wasting years of your players' careers. You're wasting years of, like, and I get the development of Keegan Murray. You're going to see him take incremental, like, steps forward, but you're also going to see Harrison Barnes take steps backward, and you could see a plateau or even a small regression from what we've seen from Fox or what we've seen from Sabonis. There's nothing that guarantees that they're going to have the same type of season. And that's where you really have to bolster this group. Mm-hmm. And like I was telling Kyle earlier on the Insiders, like, look, how much easier do you think it would be to get Malik Monk to sign back if you could whisper in his ear, hey, we're getting Brandon Ingram in 3 days or 4 days. Mm-hmm. How about you come back because we're going to be special? Or we're getting player X, we're getting player like that. You want to, we talked about this with Sabonis. You needed to show Sabonis that you're going to be good, right? In order to keep him. And you needed to prove the Harrison Barnes before two seasons ago that, hey, we're on the right path. So they'll stick around. Mm-hmm. And you did. That was a huge part of why, you know, again, Sabonis signs a huge extension. And why Harrison Barnes comes back, because you proved to them that you were on the right path. Now you might have to do it again. Like, because I don't think that Malik Monk can turn down I'd get to play with that guy too. Oh, we're going to be special. Oh, we're going for it. That to me is where, like, this team, it's not just one layer to this onion. There's so many, and you've got to figure out a way to improve for everybody. Because the last thing you want to do is have this thing go slow and like start to spin out like this. Mm-hmm. And then De'Aaron Fox go like, look, do I really want to waste my entire prime for a team that is going to fall back and, you know, or do something silly like change coaches midstream and like break this whole thing up. And now I got to start over again. Now you start feeling like Rudy Gay and you're in basketball hell again. Mm-hmm. That's what you don't want. Like, solidify this thing. That's what you have to do.
What'd you think about Davion being name dropped yesterday by Bronny James in his media scrum?
Well, clearly it means that Bronny's going to go to the Kings with the number 13 pick and his dad's going to sign for the mid-level.
Let's make it happen.
It's just, it is what it is.
James reported. He's not a Kings insider for no reason.
No, hey, no. James, I'm not reporting this. I've just heard. No.
There you go.
No.
I just heard.
No, that's not at all. Like, look, I think Davion is a good player comp for Bronny. If that's who he wants to be, okay. I mean, the fact that he's got like a pretty solid vert and longer arms and a defensive minded attitude. I mean, the dude's built. We're talking about 6'1.5", but 210. Like, that's a linebacker, a really high end linebacker, but I just don't know that he's ever going to make it as a player. Like, we have no idea. It's too early to know if Bronny's going to be a ball player at all.
Yeah. But I talked about him looking at those type of guys as, I don't know, inspiration for the player that he wants to be. Because I think those are the type of guys he might be. Like you said, the body type, you know, he could be a wall, you know, if he, you know, takes up the task of being a perimeter defensive player. Like, mm-hmm. He could be, you know, a problem for most guards in the league. And, you know, you look at Drew Holiday, he's the same way, kind of, you know, build, kind of a little bit of a wall, good footwork, things of that nature. I like him identifying those type of players in the league and trying to study those guys to become, at the very least, that type of player in the NBA. And I think Davion is a good example for him to have.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even like throw like Gary Payton II in there, mm-hmm. right? That type of guy. And I think you're right. It's about the mindset that we might be hearing from him that makes more sense. You know, what I don't want to hear is like, oh, well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be Jaw. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reality here? Like, is that where we're going with this? Because as of right now, he's not an NBA prospect. I mean, he might be a second round pick, but more likely he was not going to be drafted. And he might get drafted and he might go in the first round. We don't know at this point, but it's better for me that he has a mentality that I could be player like ABC and not like, oh, I'm going to be the next, you know, LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you're like, all right, so we have no reality here at all, and that's not a good place to start.
You know what I hope for Bronny, why I think he could, and even based on some of the things he said yesterday, one thing that makes me think he can make it in the league is a lot of guys at the highest level, they or at least maybe those in between guys, like not the Zions, not the Wimbys, not the ADs, not the Cats and the Ant-Mans, but the guys, you know, who are fringe, you know, late first round picks, second round picks, those type of guys. I think some of those guys tend to like rely on their talent. Like their talent has gotten them this far. Mm-hmm. I think Bronny knows what he's facing. And one thing, even though we love to get our jokes off about LeBron, he is the greatest player that's ever lived, or one of them. But I think he's a student of the game. Mm. If Bronny is a student of the game in the same way that his dad is, oh, I'll take that in a heartbeat. Physical ability on the basketball court aside, like if he's a passable NBA player, but he's that guy who digs into film. He's that guy who studies players. And again, you mentioned names like Drew Holiday, Derek Wright, Davion Mitchell. You're probably doing that, right? You're probably studying basketball. And that, to me, is a huge positive for any team drafting Bronny.
Yeah, and I'd also put this out there, too. Like, I've covered the NBA drafts for so many years, and I've seen so many top-tier prospects, and so many of them come in just spouting, like, the wrong things, right? Some guys come in, it's, oh, I'm a one of one. It's like, okay, well, I could player comp you to, like, seven players right now. Like, you're not one of one coming into the league. I guarantee you, you're not, unless it's, like, Taco Fall. And he even would never say I'm one of one. And that's just because he's the most giant person I've ever seen in person. But then you have this other group of players that like step in and they talk to media and their agents have said, hey, look, man, you're 6 foot two and you're really a shooting guard. I need you to convince everybody that you're a point guard. And so they come in like, oh, yeah, I think I got point guard skills. I think I compared to this player or this player. So you have those guys who are just trying to convince somebody of something that they're not. Again, Donovan Mitchell came in to the league trying to convince everyone he was a 6 foot one, 6 foot two point guard. And everyone was like, okay. Well, and that's why he tumbled a little bit. And then next thing you know, he's just a really good basketball player. But then you have the other guys who are just completely out to lunch. You know, again, Michael Carter Williams, I think, compared himself in his pre-draft workout here in Sacramento to Jason Kidd, but not like the old, like bad Jason Kidd now. Like the Jason Kidd, like when he was in his prime. And it's like, okay, you mean the Jason Kidd that couldn't shoot a jumper like you? Okay, I got you. So, like, I think that there is, like, whether it's him film study or he's listening to the right people who are saying, okay, look, man, this is how we can get you into the league. You got to start with this. And if you become something much bigger, then good on you and good on the opportunity you got. But for today, let's try to get you in the league as a defensive stopper, a guy who studies the game and a guy who might be able to like hold his own, you know, really on the defensive end. Yeah.
Happy birthday, James.
Yeah.
Have a great one, my friend. Air horns for you. And we will see you here tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Thunder. Thunder up.